And it is 10 a.m. in the West Coast, it is 1 p.m. in the East Coast, and it is 8 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel. Today, July 20th, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis, and this is The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio, we are going to listen to some great sound bites from the past, some from the present, and some that will give us the power to keep on going. July 20th is the starting of the major, you know, a summer. It's when everything happened, when people are moving around and sometimes are not even safe. And those the moment that we have to really pray together and make sure that we know, you know, where all our loved ones are and how we're going to keep them together. I'm very, very excited and emotional because there is a great gentleman with us today. His name is John Ranger, and he's doing one of the most incredible things that a man can do. He's standing for the life and the caring of young children that, against all odds, are taking by the system. And this episode is, as you will listen to him now, you'll learn that it's not, you know, it's a very common situation, and we need to make sure that we're going to act in it. John Ranger, thank you so much for coming on my show.
Thank you for having me.
John, I started telling something about what you're doing, and it's important that you explain slowly to the audience how we can understand what the situation is really all about.
Sure. I'll start from the basics. As we all know, no matter where you are in the world, children are inexperienced. They're new to life, per se, and they don't have the wherewithal, and they don't have the experience, they don't have the strength, they don't have the maturity to be able to protect themselves in situations that could either harm them, perhaps be subjected to abuse. There's a lot of things that can happen to a child. So the system started creating what they call these child protective services or youth protection services all around the world, where children who are in danger, you can phone up a hotline and give information, and that information will apparently be checked out. And if it's false, and if there's no foundation to what it is that you're saying, because some people do call these agencies just to get even with their neighbors for playing music late at night or whatever the case may be, but if it's false and unfounded, the agency is supposed to move on to a next, you know, another reporting, whatever the case may be, another phone call, and actually keep going until they find a child who really is in danger, and they're supposed to be using taxpayer dollars and government money and resources to save and to help to protect those children's integrity, to ensure that their personal development and their personal security is, in fact, moving forward in a safe and secure manner at all times. What is actually transpiring as we speak? These agencies used to exist a long time ago, and, of course, it took them time to get up to par because there were times not too long ago when absolutely nothing was being done in these type of situations, and kids were just being, you know, whatever would be, and that would be it. So these agencies started operating, and right from the start, they learned that one of the ways to stay out of the public eye would be to claim confidentiality, would be to say to anyone calling them or checking or wanting to know what's going on in the inner workings, the administration aspect of these agencies, is this confidentiality, it's this secrecy, because they would say, well, we don't have to talk about that, we need to protect privacy. And okay, what that skyrocketed into in a matter of time were that these agencies were actually operating in a completely lawless, reckless, and very, very dangerous manner. And the only time they would have to answer to anyone would be if things really, really got out of hand and there was a big investigation. And actually, what's literally, I believe, has actually happened as we speak is that there's a lot of money involved here, trillions and trillions of dollars involved in what's going on. And children today, believe it or not, I wouldn't have believed this myself 4 years ago, but I've seen so many situations now, I am completely stunned, and I've just devoted all my time and energy to this because it's just so surreal. Children are being recruited by way of force, threats, coercion, fraud, you name it. These social workers, and half of them aren't even social workers, by the way, they're just government agents, they are literally going to court, making up wild accusations, wild stories against parents and against the families and et cetera, et cetera. And they're taking these children away from the families. They're apprehending them and putting them in foster care. Now, I can't speak for the governments myself, although I'm 100% certain that they know exactly what's going on because they are using tremendous amount of resources to try to keep tabs on it, to try to keep it silent, to try not to let this get out of what's going on. They are really, really, really doing whatever they possibly can to keep this very, very quiet. So what's actually happening here is that children are being apprehended. They're being taken from their families, believe it or not, for no reason. Sometimes it's a small little thing, like the house might be a little bit messy. I mean, when I was a kid, I come on, you know, you got the parents got a lot of things. Sorry,
John. I hear you loud and clear. And as I stated before, I'm familiar with that story, and I second your outrage in that because the idea that so many kids are taking out from the houses, putting into some sort of shelter, guarded by some kind of agent that by some excuse they think that they are better than their own parents because of abuse, neglect, et cetera, and what they become of them, they usually become prostitute. They come, they went to, as you say, drug addiction. They go into whatever thing that the agent give them. And this said story needs to be opened at like a jar of worms that needs to be cleared out because it's enough. And if you're telling me, I know about this story from here because I've been sitting on committees in the parliament while they're talking to some of those services, the agents, and they were having so cocky response. And I remember myself, you know, getting mad at the response. I said, if you guys make a mistake on one child, you're ruining life, you know, entire life. So, John, tell me how you guys are going about to stop it. What's the procedure? Okay, we have a problem. Now how are we going to go? Do you have a collaboration of some representative, people who work in the government who are actually on the right side of the game? Do you have that assistance?
Absolutely not. I'm very, very sad to say that there have been some individuals. I live in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. The province of Quebec in Canada, North America. And I can tell you, as a matter of fact, that what's going on here is that government resources, the very departments that are supposed to be correcting the situation and making sure that it doesn't continue, it is such a mess as we speak. Children are being legally kidnapped so often and at such a high rate that these agencies that are supposed to be there to protect, you know, the human rights of children, public protector, let's say, the ombudsman, et cetera, these agencies are simply balking. They're laughing. They're almost laughing in the face of any parents or caregivers who are actually subjected to this type of situation. And the children are being completely ignored and dragged through the system by their necks.
All right. Now, let's tell the worst truth about that. You know, the impossible truth that the incentive to all, they get paid for every child. Every child that go into the system, they get paid. That's why it's so flourishing. It's like incentive to kidnap those kids. Is that true?
Exactly. That's 100% what you're saying is exactly right on the dime. Exactly what happens. What happens is the more children that they can get in the system, the more funding, the more resources that they get from the government, and the more kind of a pot de vin, as they say in French, a large amount of cash is there in budgeted, it's available, and it's being used. Who knows what it's being used for, because it's certainly not going to the services for the children. That is 100% certain. It's just, it's unbelievable. And what's happening where I am particularly is that there have been educators and educatrices, women and men educators here in this province who have taken the time to stand up and try to challenge the government and say, hey, what are you doing? I'm a professional. I've worked with children. I know what it's supposed to be. And what these people have been subjected to is incarceration, constant stalking, absolute abuse, and threats of violence. It's just unbelievable. You would not think this type of stuff...
You're messing with the system. You are being corrupt. You know, they're going to corrode them. There is nothing they're going to do that can protect them because they expose themselves. The only way, and John, we need to talk about it. We are online on the internet. Remember, this show go global. This is not something that you have it in your backyard, that if we talk about it, you know, something is going to be coming out. We are going to make a major movement and a roar, a big call for all the children, because the children of the world deserve to be protected. And we can talk about it through United Nations. We got a call to order the government of Canada. We got to talk about the social services of Canada. We got to talk about the social services of America. We got to talk the social services from Israel, that I know for a fact that happens too, because I've been looking, listening, and having activism on that. So I know. We're going to make it a movement of worldwide, because it's enough in those democratic states that say so-called we protect the world. They actually neglect, abuse, and give some people the authority over the youngster and the future. And then they ask, what happened to those people who suicide and bomb themselves to death? Well, you know, guess what? This is one of the results, depressed youngster. And I was asking about it yesterday in the show. What makes those youngsters come about and devote themselves to death? It's that kind of neglect. This is one of the seeds that they're sowing. So we need to protect them. John, there is any website that we can talk about, or... online movement that you can open? Can we open a Facebook page that it will be global and start going viral, so everybody will start putting their pitch on? We can make it.
There is a petition that I myself started. There is something like 1,567 people who have signed it already. And this is regarding the word psychosoma, which is spelled P-S-Y-C-H-O-P-S-E-M-A, and Webster's Dictionary. This particular petition, if you type in...
Yeah, you do. You need to give us some easier word, you know. It's really, I want many people to come. It's really, it's nice. You're too smart for our own good at this coast. But if you need really something that will be easy to access, I need calling for the kids now. The kids now. This is our world now for the kids. Global Kids Movement, Canada. Something like this, whatever.
Yeah, I'm speechless. I don't know what to tell you. I've been involved in this now for close to 5 years, And we even have what the International Bureau of Children's Rights here in Montreal, Quebec. And I went to these people, and I tried to tell them, I said, hey, what's going on? You're in the business of protecting the rights of children on an international basis, but the children here in Quebec are being destroyed slowly but surely by the very people who are supposed to be protecting them. And what's up with that? And they just quickly stopped all communication with me and asked me not to go back there. And, yeah, everyone, the Quebec Human Rights Commission. Could you imagine? The Quebec Human Rights Commission. I sat down in a meeting with two investigators.
Yeah, you're too close to home. You need to go global. It's next door, it doesn't work. But they work together and they, yes.
I understand what you're saying about being too close to home, but this is Canada. This is a peacekeeping, we have always been a peacekeeping country. We have always been a country that's been different from anywhere else in the world in that people could trust us. We had integrity. We had honor. We were your friends, no matter who you are and where you came from. Now, when I sit down with two investigators of the Quebec Human Rights Commission, and I tell them that these agencies that are legally kidnapping these children, and this, to me, in my opinion, is a form of human trafficking because they're getting paid while the children are in their system. So when I sit down with two investigators and I tell them, hey, you know, I caught these people with what they're doing, but then they go into their data banks and change all the notes, change all the information. When I look at these two investigators, they put their pencils down and they stopped writing when I started talking about this. I was mesmerized. I looked into their eyes, and I could clearly see.
John, you have to understand. You have to understand. This world is made from the light people and the dark people. People who are real are the one that makes the difference, and the one who cover up. Now, you don't have to discourage. Anytime you find, when you see the blank in their eyes, just go on. Just forget, you know, forget it. Step out. Don't waste your time. We need to make it. You have to have one page on the net and start sending it. We are going to call upon any the court commission in Hague, the human rights, everything that is global. If you start moving it and we're calling it to everybody, we are not going to stop until there is a global understanding that whoever takes children needs to be reminded that there is a God. There is a God, and we are his messenger. We work for the goodness of the world, and we want those children. Those children are our responsibility. It's our duty. So whatever you do, it's so sacred. And I want to pray with you today, and I want to bless you, and I want to encourage you, and I give you all the energy that I can to make sure that you keep on this task, because what you're doing is for saving the children are the most sacred thing in the world. So I want to bless you with all my heart on this one.
I really believe that every human being has a duty to be there and to ensure the safety of any, and I mean any, doesn't matter what color, doesn't matter what size, it's not important where they come
right.
from. Everyone right. has a duty to protect these children.
Absolutely. Hallelujah. Absolutely. I'm serious. Absolutely. This is what we have. You saw the problem, you're calling it, and we're praying together, and we're roaring. We're not going to stop. So please feel comfortable to call me anytime if you have any questions. I'll be on the other side watching, following up, and making sure that your call is being heard. So please feel this is your space too, okay? Whatever you need time, just call upon us, okay, sweetie?
Okay, just one last thing, if I can.
Sure.
Of course, you introduced me when I came on, John Ranger,
yes.
JohnRanger.
Yes.
I'm on Facebook, yes. And if the people want to access this petition to sign it, I would, from my heart, the bottom of my heart, I would ask that anyone who is interested in the better health and safety and protection of children, check on Facebook. Look for John Ranger. I have a Canada Court Watch t-shirt on. I'm a member of Canada Court Watch. And the first posting on the top of my page, you can click on that and you can sign this petition. And that would be one of the first steps of helping these children, because every time somebody fills out that petition and clicks sign, a message is sent to United Nations Children's Rights Committee in Geneva and many other human rights organizations. So if enough people click on that link today and sign the petition, perhaps we can flood the United Nations with our cries for help. Perhaps the United Nations will for once hear us.
Yeah, all the mommy in the world. We need to join forces together. Now, spell me Ranger again. It's R, please.
John, R-A-N-G-E-R.
All right, because I'm looking at John Ranger here, and I see founder of Malaysia Black Dagger, somebody else. We're not seeing you. Let's see if, all right, well, let's look for you. Make sure that your page is in a few formats. Open a different page also for the children, so it will be easier to find you. Okay, and I'll be happy for you to check and put on BBS Radio The Impossible Truth on my page. You're welcome to put your posting so everybody can see it. Okay.
Great. I will do that.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John, for coming on the show. I know how important it is. God bless you. Go.
Thanks.
Be good. We love Canada. It should be back and good again. All right? God bless you all.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let's get some music. Let's go to a break. Thank you. Such amazing talk with John. Children endangered by our own system. Sometimes, you know, the system are so big and there are people that infiltrate it and work for so-called the system, but they actually work for the underground system. Don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. Many good people are serving the nation and many people are going to give everything in their power to serve it. And there are others that will do everything in their power to destroy, to take advantage and to be greedy and to do anything in their power to their own good. So they suck the system up. They prepare a very, very plausible story, and many get caught into. And usually, it's the story on the left behind, and it's the story from the Egypt Exodus. It's always like this. You have to watch those left behind, because the wicked, the cowards, those come after the after the soft part of the humanity. They come after them, and the children are the one. But sometimes they will find, you know, a bigger force that can stop them. Maybe it will be a start. God bless. Now, we're running fast as always. I know that my shows, you know, it's because it's in God's time. It's always running fast. Let's go to something that from the past that reminds us who we are, okay?
I know some in Washington would like us to start leaving Iraq now. To begin withdrawing before our commanders tell us we are ready would be dangerous for Iraq, for the region, and for the United States. It would mean surrendering the future of Iraq to Al-Qaeda. It would mean that we'd be risking mass killings on a horrific scale. It would mean we allow the terrorists to establish a safe haven in Iraq to replace the one they lost in Afghanistan. It would mean increasing the probability that American troops would have to return at some later date to confront an enemy that is even more dangerous.
Those who would trade our freedom for the soup kitchen of the welfare state have told us they have a utopian solution, a peace without victory. They call their policy accommodation. And they say if we'll only avoid any direct confrontation with the enemy, he'll forget his evil ways and learn to love us. All who oppose them are indicted as warmongers. They say we offer simple answers to complex problems. But perhaps there is a simple answer. Not an easy answer, but simple. If you and I have the courage to tell our elected officials that we want our national policy based on what we know in our hearts is morally right. Alexander Hamilton said a nation which can prefer disgrace to danger is prepared for a master and deserves one.
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. Above all, we must realize that no arsenal or no weapon in the arsenals of the world is so formidable as the will and moral courage of free men and women. It is a weapon our adversaries in today's world do not have. It is a weapon that we as Americans do have. Let that be understood by those who practice terrorism and prey upon their neighbors. America must win this war. Therefore, I will work, I will save, I will sacrifice, I will endure. I will fight cheerfully and do my utmost as if the issue of the whole struggle depended on me alone. The crisis we're facing today does not require of us the kind of sacrifice that Martin Treptow and so many thousands of others were called upon to make. It does require, however, our best effort and our willingness to believe in ourselves and to believe in our capacity to perform great deeds, to believe that together, with God's help, we can and will resolve the problems which now confront us. And after all, why shouldn't we believe that? We are Americans.
You bet you, America. God bless America. God bless the troops. God bless those good people in harm's way. May they come back home safe and sound. There is no nation in the world that can inspire, can empower, can give hope and love to the rest of the world like America. America was created like a big gift to the world. People don't realize what America is all about. And I want to tell to all of those Iranian people that signed the deal that they're waiting for McDonald's, you better believe it, McDonald's will come there. But just remember, Walmart will follow and all the rest of the good stuff of America will follow because you guys deserve to have open society like the rest of us. And I know there are people who scare, there are people who don't believe, there are people who think that, you know, signing with Iran is incredible, but signing, in some days a start. Of course, they're making, you know, the huff and puff from everywhere. That's the way they are. But we know politics and we know politicians, and it's not news that they will, not tolerate. But we need to ask ourselves, where are we going? And since we decide to start signing an agreement, it means that we are planning to have some kind of an agreeable future. It means that we are slowing down that madness. So we need to put a hold back on all those powers that try to destroy the world. And all those goons that ran loose needs to come called to become, you know, back to humanity. Because there are people, if we want it or not, those people of the world. It's not like we want to expel them, kill them all, because we cannot and we are not going to do it. But we want to make sure that if they come up to kill somebody, they'll be destroyed first. And Americans are very, very generous in everything they do. But when it comes to fighting, they have no excuses. You know, if they want to, you know, catch God and those beautiful, beautiful imaginary Disney feature that they have in their dreams, the American will arrange the meeting. That's how they say it in the Marine. I know. I've got so many of my friends are saying it all the time. So just repeating it. So this is Orly Benny Davis with BDS Radio, The Impossible Truth. We had John Ranger with a story, sad story about the system that is malfunctioning. You know, sometimes the malfunctioning of one government department needs to be fixed. In America and Canada, elsewhere too. I know, in fact, that in the Middle East it definitely doesn't work. So we need to start having a collective idea where it does work, because it cannot be bad everywhere. And I hope and pray for the kids of the rest of the world that someplace, you know, they've actually been taken care of very well. You know, probably their parents' house, that's the only place that they should be taken care of. Anyway, let's go and continue, because time flies when we're having fun. We have another spot that I wanted to let you know, because right now, after the signature of the Iranian deal, everybody is now going back to square one. Oh, okay, the Middle East. So maybe we have some other sound bites to explain to us about the Middle East as Ronald Reagan thought in 1982.
My fellow Americans, today has been a day that should make us proud. It marked the end of the successful evacuation of PLO from Beirut, Lebanon. This peaceful step could never have been taken without the good offices of the United States, and especially the truly heroic work of a great American diplomat, Ambassador Philip Habib. Thanks to his efforts, I'm happy to announce that the U.S. Marine contingent helping to supervise the evacuation has accomplished its mission. Our young men should be out of Lebanon within 2 weeks. They, too, have served the cause of peace with distinction, and we can all be very proud of them. But the situation in Lebanon is only part of the overall problem of conflict in the Middle East. So, over the past 2 weeks, while events in Beirut dominated the front page, America was engaged in a quiet, behind-the-scenes effort to lay the groundwork for a broader peace in the region. For once, there were no premature leaks as U.S. diplomatic missions traveled to Mideast capitals, and I met here at home with a wide range of experts to map out an American peace initiative for the long-suffering peoples of the Middle East, Arab and Israeli alike. It seemed to me that with the agreement in Lebanon, we had an opportunity for a more far-reaching peace effort in the region, and I was determined to seize that moment. In the words of the scripture, the time had come to follow after the things which make for peace. Tonight, I want to report to you on the steps we've taken and the prospects they can open up for a just and lasting peace in the Middle East. America has long been committed to bringing peace to this troubled region. For more than a generation, successive United States administrations have endeavored to develop a fair and workable process that could lead to a true and lasting Arab-Israeli peace. Our involvement in the search for Mideast peace is not a matter of preference. It's a moral imperative. The strategic importance of the region to the United States is well known. But our policy is motivated by more than strategic interests. We also have an irreversible commitment to the survival and territorial integrity of friendly states. Nor can we ignore the fact that the well-being of much of the world's economy is tied to stability in the strife-torn Middle East. Finally, our traditional humanitarian concerns dictated a continuing effort to peacefully resolve conflicts. When our administration assumed office in January of 1981, I decided that the general framework for our Middle East policy should follow the broad guidelines laid down by my predecessors. There were two basic issues we had to address. First, there was the strategic threat to the region posed by the Soviet Union and its surrogates, best demonstrated by the brutal war in Afghanistan. And second, the peace process between Israel and its Arab neighbors. With regard to the Soviet threat, we have strengthened our efforts to develop with our friends and allies a joint policy to deter the Soviets and their surrogates from further expansion in the region, and if necessary, to defend against it. With respect to the Arab-Israeli conflict, we've embraced the Camp David framework as the only way to proceed. We have also recognized, however, solving the Arab-Israeli conflict in and of itself cannot assure peace throughout a region as vast and troubled as the Middle East. Our first objective under the Camp David process was to ensure the successful fulfillment of the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty. This was achieved with the peaceful return of the Sinai to Egypt in April 1982. To accomplish this, we worked hard with our Egyptian and Israeli friends, and eventually with other friendly countries to create the multinational force which now operates in the Sinai. Throughout this period of difficult and time-consuming negotiations, we never lost sight of the next step of Camp David: autonomy talks to pave the way for permitting the Palestinian people to exercise their legitimate rights. However, owing to the tragic assassination of President Sadat and other crises in the area, it was not until January 1982 that we were able to make a major effort to renew these talks. Secretary of State Haig and Ambassador Fairbanks made three visits to Israel and Egypt early this year to pursue the autonomy talks. Considerable progress was made in developing the basic outline of an American approach which was to be presented to Egypt and Israel after April. The successful completion of Israel's withdrawal from Sinai and the courage shown on this occasion by Prime Minister Begin and President Mubarak in living up to their agreements convinced me the time had come for a new American policy to try to bridge the remaining differences between Egypt and Israel on the autonomy process. So, in May, I called for specific measures and a timetable for consultations with the governments of Egypt and Israel on the next steps in the peace process. However, before this effort could be launched, the conflict in Lebanon preempted our efforts. The autonomy talks were basically put on hold while we sought to untangle the parties in Lebanon and still the guns of war. The Lebanon war, tragic as it was, has left us with a new opportunity for Middle East peace. We must seize it now and bring peace to this troubled area so vital to world stability while there is still time.
With BBS Radio on the Impossible Truth. This is our Monday show. We have a Sunday, Monday, and a Wednesday show. On Monday, we talk about America and about the global efforts. And peace is it's a global effort. But if you listen to Ronald Reagan recording, it's from 1982. We are in 2015. It's been quite some time since the effort started, and the Arab neighbors are not ceasing to attack. Lebanon is not in peace. Hezbollah is going to be, you know, stronger. I heard that many, you know, Italian got kidnapped in Lebanon recently. We have Czechs from the Czech Republic that are missing. We have people in Lebanon. Now, if they are not going to stop, some kind of international effort is going to find its way around that in some sort, because not the Italian, not the Czechs, not anybody is going to settle while people are being kidnapped there. And Lebanon is too small and obviously guarded very well to be, you know, that the people won't know where they are. They will stay, you know, in their holes for a few, but they'll have to get out. And soon enough, they better release all those, you know, captured. You know, it's this incredible sense of people's life becomes so liquid, so not, you know, important for some reason. Why is that? Why do we think that life is so not amazing for you to capture? And just imagine, anybody who's dead is less of a help to this world, and we need all the help we can. So please, guys, you know, get a grip of yourself and start turning this page on history. It's about time. If anybody remember, in the last show we had a quote from Robert Bradford, who spoke before the United Nations about calling to, you know, the last call to elk for the nature. And today, of course, I got some more news about Shell Oil's reckless rush to drill in Arctic polar bear seas. And everybody, please make emergency, you know, movement in this. They're asking for help, and they want, you see, anytime you have to go through effort, it takes so much time, so much effort, so much mobility, and so much money. And some of the funds needs to be going to the right fund. And NRDC is the fund that of the campaign to save the Arctic from the catastrophic oil spill. They said the Interior Department itself said that there is 75% chance of major oil spill and no proven method to clean up if production of goes forward with the Arctic ice-filled water. A blowout could go completely unchecked all winter long, coating polar bears in a deadly slick of black crude, suffocating and danger bowhead whales, carrying thousands of migratory birds and poisoning one of the Earth's last most fragile wild places. All right, Robert Redford, you are here. This is your show that, you know, your call has been heard loud and clear, and I'm here for you. So God bless you. I hope that you keep up the good fight, because it's important. And let's get some music so we can just go back to another crisis. God bless you. I love you all. Just let's listen to some music. And we are back. We're calling all angels. And, you know, one of the angels on the hill on Capitol Hill is Congressman Joe Wilson from South Carolina, a man, a judge, a colonel in the Army, a man that, you know, spoke on this show before, a man that I had the honor to work and help and assist in so many ways that I could. But his work is immense, so he's always, you know, a few passes ahead. And, of course, you keep on going, and God bless him. I really, really would love to see him as a VP nominee, because he deserves it. He's a man with really a big, big future. For America's sake, we need the good guys in place. Now, we have a soundbite from him after the Iranian deal was signed.
Ladies and gentlemen, this morning at the House Foreign Affairs Committee, we discussed the nuclear agreement reached with the regime in Iran as an historic mistake. I appreciate the bipartisan efforts of Chairman Ed Royce and Ranking Member Elliot Engel. I am disappointed that the President has made dangerous concessions while negotiating with the murderous Iranian regime. This regime sponsors terrorists who attack American families and openly calls for the death of Americans and our allies, especially Israel. The concern over the agreement is bipartisan. Today, former Democratic Senator Joe Lieberman testified that this was a bad deal, citing a recent editorial in Tehran's government-controlled newspaper that predicted the U.S., quote, will one fine day cease to be visible on the map of the world, end of quote. Senator Lieberman also reminded us that, quote, this Iranian government has the blood of a lot of Americans on its hands, end of quote. Additionally, Foreign Policy Initiative board member William Crystal wrote, quote, it's obviously a very good deal for the Iranian regime. It is a very bad deal for America. So Congress should rise to the occasion. Congress should engage in full and comprehensive debate. Congress should then pass a resolution of disapproval. Congress should then override the president's veto and return America's Iran policy to dealing from a position of strength rather than supplication. I agree. In an effort to achieve political gain, President Obama has ignored Congress and the American people. In the coming days, I hope the president is willing to listen to the American people. I'm very concerned that this agreement will not prevent the Iranian regime from developing a nuclear weapon now or in the future. The president is establishing a sad legacy of giving in to an extremist regime with nuclear intercontinental ballistic missiles targeting American families. Iran is well known as a state sponsor of terrorism. We must have peace through strength, and this agreement has put America in a position of weakness to the regime and to the eyes of the world. Congress now has 60 days to review the nuclear agreement, and we can pass a resolution of approval or disapproval of the deal. I cannot support an agreement that threatens American families or our allies overseas, especially Israel. The president has threatened to veto any action by Congress to prevent this bad deal from going through. I believe it is irresponsible to jeopardize the safety of Americans, our allies, and innocent civilians in the region with an historic mistake. For more information about the nuclear deal and to keep up with Congress's debate on the agreement, please visit the website www.joewilson.house.gov to keep up with the latest. I'm grateful to serve you in Congress.
Wonderful. And just remember, Joe Wilson is from the 2nd District of South Carolina. His hands probably are full right now with this incredible Confederate flag, old deal. But, everything has to evolve. Now they have 60 days to analyze the deal with Iran. I have some comments from Hank Shenkov, one of our greatest lawyer, strategic advisor to President Clinton, and my dear friend. And he was on the show before, and I'm happy that he had a comment, and hope to see more of him on TV in the future.
I have great relationship with the Mexican people. I have many people working for me. You can look at the job in Washington. I have many legal immigrants working for me. Many of them come from Mexico. They love me. I love them. And I'll tell you something. If I get the nomination, I'll win the Latino vote. I will win it because I'm going to create jobs. Hillary Clinton is not going to be able to create jobs. I will tell you right now. Neither is Jeb Bush going to be able to create jobs. I will create jobs, and the Latinos will have jobs that they don't have right now, and I will win that vote.
I got to tell you something, folks, and welcome to hour number two of the Steve Molsberg Show. He must employ thousands of Hispanics, and all he has to do is, have press conferences and have a bunch of them behind him, or send out them as surrogates to talk to the media or to be there with him and vouch for him. I mean, he's going to make a case even on that issue. Now, there's a new poll out, which we're going to talk about in just a second, but I will grease the skids, as they say. There's a new poll that has Donald Trump leading the Republican field nationally. That's right, breaking as we take to air in this hour. It's a new poll from The Economist and YouGov. And Donald Trump has 15%, and that's 4 more than the next closest Republican presidential candidate, who is Governor Jeb Bush. Also, Senator Rand Paul, they are tied for second place. Also, just moments ago, Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, Republican, of course, I might add, minority, of course, on two fronts, she signed into law the bill banning the Confederate flag from the state house property. So we have that to talk about. We have Joe Biden to throw in, Hillary not knowing what a subpoena is, apparently. And to share in all that conversation is Hank Shinecoff, president of Shinecoff Communications, Democratic political consultant, Newsmax contributor. Hello, sir.
What's your name again?
How do you do?
Good to see you.
I don't know. Trump something. I got actually a guy on the street selling buttons. I got my Trump button.
Is that a new name? Trump Molesberg?
Trump Molesberg.
Very nice.
Molesberg,
I like it.
Trump.
Whatever you want.
All right. Anyway, so this is the first national poll, I believe, that Donald Trump has pulled out in front to lead. Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised. It's really simple. If you keep banging someone around, criticizing them, and carrying on and talking about them, what do you think is going to happen?
I would say my first initial reaction would be people won't like him.
Nah. Donald, and he's, you know, when he talks about Mexican Americans and others, he's really making a very valid point.
He is.
Trump is very well liked by average people in the street. They think he's a tough guy. He's like them, even though he's not like them, but he's a tough guy. He fights. He's the kind of person they want. You know, if you went to the you went to the announcement, never mind the idea that people were paid, but in the streets, I mean, the people in the streets weren't paid. Who were they? Black, Latin, blue collar. I mean, those are Trump's people, and his style tends to relate to them.
And isn't that what Hillary is trying to, I digress here for a second, but isn't that what Hillary is trying to be, the champion of the average person, and here Trump is emerging as that?
What people aren't understanding, and you and I have had this
discussion
on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite brilliant.
Thank you very much.
Take 2 bicarbonate soda and call me tomorrow. What we've discussed on this program before is this populist kind of thing going on. When there's a vacancy, insurgents tend to win. Hillary's not an insurgent. Donald Trump is an insurgent. Jeb Bush is not an insurgent. Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, is an insurgent. John Kasich, if he gets in, will be an insurgent. On and on and on. Insurgents tend to win open slots. Right now, the insurgent that people are paying attention to with a populist rhetoric on the right is Donald Trump, and on the left, it's Bernie Sanders.
All right. Now, so what does Trump have to do to maintain this? So he keeps this up for another month. He gets on the stage in the debate. I know we'll talk about this as it gets closer.
Right.
But, I mean, I would have to think he's going to re-impress the people he's impressed and draw a lot more that haven't been impressed by his frankness, openness, and the way he handles himself on that stage.
What Republicans are looking for is not clear yet. But one thing we do know is in a limited field with limited polling, months and months and months before.
All right. We are back because we're ready to wrap up the show. We've been busy as usual. The show come and go so fast. When you do God's work, that's what it is. And as I say always, there is a God and it's not us. So just hold still and believe because, you know, redemption can come in a second. You don't even know. You don't know where it's going to happen. It's going to happen because we all together are going to turn this page on history and make this world better because we know better, we deserve better, and we can make it happen. So I hope that you enjoy the show and I thank you for being with us. Today, it's Orly Benny Davis. We have a Wednesday show, and it's going to be at 7 p.m. Jerusalem time, meaning that it's going to be 9 a.m. in the West Coast and 12 noon in the East Coast. So please join us. Call in if you want. I love you all. God bless you all, and talk to you Wednesday. Ciao.
You said that day. Said, be careful what you wish for, babe.